Social expectation drowns us all inside. What you have should be what I want, 'cause what I have just ain't alright. The clothes I wear, the way I comb my hair, how I live, oh, I don't care.
That someone is baser than you in something, then remember that you too are baser than him in something else. Is it not so? Everyone has certain good qualities, but also some dislike characteristics. If another person has one bad quality, then perhaps we have many bad qualities. Or we may possess only one unseemly characteristic, but that is worse than what the other has. Then how can we say that he is inferior? What stops us from taking precedence in greeting him? Uninvited thought is not punishable. Sometimes one gets a sudden thought that the other person is worse than him. Simply having a fleeting thought will not invite Allah's punishment. However, it is wrong to condition the mind to think about that and to conduct oneself according to the thought. That is arrogance and needs to be corrected. Intelligent student thinks high of himself. Let us cite the example of an intelligent, outstanding student in a class who outshines his class fellows. He will think that he is better than a dull, unintelligent class fellow, but he should offset that thought by telling himself, I do not know in how many ways he might be better than me. I wonder what deed of his might be accepted by Allah, and I might stay behind him. Or I might possess many defects which are unknown to me, or just a single of my shortcomings might be more grave than his weakness in studies. The weaker student is more pious. Suppose a student might be dull and poor in studies, but he might be regular in discharging his obligations and in staying away from sin. Another who is intelligent and studious might be derelict in performing his duties and might be committing sins. So his praiseworthy qualities are worthless. For if he lags behind in deeds, then his knowledge cannot deliver him. His one evil erases his good qualities. To lag behind in deen is the real evil. Nowadays, people do not regard religious shortcoming a bad thing, though this indeed is the real bad thing. A man introduced his son to me, said Mufti Taqi Usmani, Damod Barakatum. He introduced his son to me saying, he's a very intelligent and was an extraordinary student. Now he has a job with a certain company in a foreign country where his employers and co-workers regard him very highly. I congratulated him and said, may Allah bless him. But he went on to say, however, he has become a little irreligious. Mufti Sahib is saying, he spoke as if that was not something to worry about. He is ahead in what matters, except for the little shortcoming. Example of irreligiousness. I gave him the example of a doctor whom the villagers had invited to examine their ailing mate and companion. The doctor reported that the man was okay from head to toe. He's okay from head to toe. All his limbs being sound. But you know what? Only his soul was no longer in his body. I told that man that this example suited his son in every way. Everything is okay with him, but only he has lost his soul, he has lost his deen, his religion. In fact, a shortcoming in religion or the evil habit of bad deeds is graver than all defects. Hence, we might be worse than the person we consider to be inferior. The downtrodden would be approved. Granted, you have fewer defects than the other man, but how can you say who is approved in the sight of Allah? You may have fewer defects, the other person might have more. Okay, if that is taken, if that is granted. Sometimes those people who seem to be simple to us, they are very esteemed in the sight of Allah, but yet they look simple to us. In other words, majhulun fil ard, they are unknown in the land, but ma'rufun fis sama, known in the heavens. The Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, Rubba ash'ath, many a person who was disheveled here and covered with dust, Rubba ash'ath, madfu'um bil abwab, he might be turned away by people from their doors. He is madfu, shoved off and pushed away and turned away from the doors. Rubba ash'ath, madfu'un bil abwab. But that same person, law aqsama, if he were to take an oath in the name of Allah, law aqsama ala Allah la abarrahu, then Allah would fulfill that oath. Allah will fulfill what he says, hadith of Muslim Sharif. He may be insignificant to men, yani majhulun fil ard, but Allah holds him in high esteem and does not let him down when he says and takes an oath that something will happen. Allah doesn't let him down. Allah makes that happen. Higher ranks in Jannah. The hadith says about those people who will enjoy higher ranks in Jannah. Alladhina idha gabu lam yaftaqidu. They are those people when they are absent, they are not missed. Alladhina idha gabu lam yaftaqidu, those when they are absent, they are not missed. Ibn Majah, hadith of Ibn Majah. No one will bother to look out for them or ask where they are. If a person was a regular worshipper in the masjid, and does not come on one day, then no other worshipper will inquire about him. These are the same people, if they make a proposal for marriage, they will not be accepted. Such people will get the highest ranks in Jannah. Who knows? The Rasul said, Alladhina idha gabu, they are those people who seem simple. And when they are absent, lam yaftaqidu, they are not missed. But yet they are the ones who will get the higher ranks in Jannah. So only Allah knows who's the worth of every person. Do not judge by the visible. Hence, do not be deceived by anyone's apparent appearance. We do not know how he stands in the sight of Allah. Never consider any man to be inferior, and to look at a Muslim with disgust is a grave sin. It is haram to do that, just as it is haram to drink wine or to commit adultery. Thus, if you are ever puffed up with an excellence in you and a weakness in another, then cure that immediately by telling yourself that he might have some excellences that you do not possess, and you might have some shortcomings that are worse than his. So when this is, anytime a person is puffed up with an excellence, if you are ever puffed up with an excellence in you, and you see some weakness in another person, cure that immediately by telling yourself that he might have some excellences that you don't possess, and you might have some shortcomings that are worse than his. This man might be held in high esteem by Allah. Those who earn Allah's wrath. There are those people who seem very dignified and respectable outwardly, but they may not have even the slightest of standing with Allah. No maqam with Allah at all. May Allah preserve all of us from being one of this category. Ameen. The Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam has said, those whom I detest and who will be farthest from me on the day of Qiyamah are they who speak too much, who speak sarcastically, and who are arrogant. Those whom I detest and who will be farthest from me on the day of Qiyamah are they who speak too much, who speak sarcastically, and who are arrogant. Tirmizi. They are the cream of the gatherings. They speak eloquently and are very well known. The common people like them and praise them as learned men who are the souls of meetings. But these people have the wrath of Allah on them. May Allah protect us from being among them. Pass no judgment. We know, therefore, that neither the apparent excellences nor the apparent demerits are standards in the sight of Allah to grant approval or disapproval. Man must not judge other people. Rather, he should always fear Allah and neither praise nor criticize anyone. Do not regard even a kafir, a disbeliever, as inferior. When a man becomes religious, he is very excited in the beginning and finds faults with every other person. He consigns everyone to Jahannam, and only he would go to Jannah. This is a very dangerous way of thinking, for we must not even pass a final judgment on a disbeliever that he will go to Jahannam. Allah may cause him any moment to believe, and he may have a change of heart. Do not say of a disbeliever that he will be in fire endlessly. Don't say that. Maulana Ashraf Ali Thanwi, Rahmatullah Alayh, spoke of a very subtle matter. He said that if someone's outward conduct and speech resemble disbelief and kufr, then a mufti or a jurist must give a fatwa that these things are irreligious and disbelieving ideas, and he should be treated in the world as a kafir, as a disbeliever. However, the mufti should be very careful, and if the man has 99 indications of being a mu'min, if the man has 99 indications of being a kafir, a disbeliever, but one indication of a mu'min, a believer, then he should not be classified as a disbeliever at all. And this is how Imam Abu Hanifa used to operate. When people would ask him for a verdict of kufr against anybody, he would look to see what is that one dalil that would make a person a mu'min. And even after passing judgment against him, that he is a disbeliever, do not say that because of this disbelief, he is worthy of staying in the fire endlessly. For indeed, outwardly, his conduct is disbelieving in character. But in private, his sayings might be interpreted in such a way that in the sight of Allah, he might be exonerated. But outwardly, his conduct is disbelieving in character. But in private, his sayings might be interpreted in such a way that in the sight of Allah, he might be exonerated. An example. Maulana Thanwi Rahmatullah Alayhi presented an example from Bukhari Sharif, Hadith of Bukhari, of a man of the ancient peoples. When he was dying, he gave deathbed instructions that his body should be burnt in fire and ashes should be thrown into the air when it blows very swiftly. He explained that he did not wish to come to Allah's hands lest he, Allah, may punish him. So he doesn't want to come to Allah's hands lest Allah may punish him for his sins, which were many. So his instructions were followed when he died. When he was brought to Allah, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wasallam is narrating the incident of the example of the man of ancient peoples. when he was brought to Allah, Allah said, first of all, he believed in my existence. Secondly, he feared me and knew that I could punish him. Because of these things, I forgive him. First of all, he believed in my existence, in my wujud, in my wahdaniyat. Secondly, he feared me and knew that I could punish him. Because of these things, I forgive him. Forgiven in spite of outward disbelief. So on the face of it, his instructions implied kufr, disbelief. For he said that he would not get into Allah's hands if his ashes were scattered by the breeze. This means that he denied Allah's powers to be able to collect the ashes and resurrect him. But since the underlying motive was fear of Allah, Allah forgave him. Hence, Maulana Tanwi Rahmatullah Alayhi said that if a man commits an act of kufr, then the mufti should issue a fatwa of kufr against him, but not of being consigned to the fire forever. Leave that to Allah. Allah knows best. Another example, Mansur Hallaj. Mansur Hallaj, who is known to have said, Anal Haq, and the story is very famous. He said, Anal Haq, I am Al Haq, I am the truth, I am the truth, and Al Haq is the name of Allah. He was a disciple of Junaid Baghdadi, Rahmatullah Alayhi, the great Sheikh Junaid Baghdadi. He might even have been his Khalifa also too. When Mansur Hallaj, when he said, Anal Haq, I am the Haq, I am the truth, it was obviously an expression of kufr outwardly. The scholars passed a verdict against him of disbelief, though he certainly was not a disbeliever. Mansur al-Hallaj indeed wasn't any kafir, but yet the scholars passed a verdict against him of disbelief, though he certainly was not a disbeliever. He wasn't a disbeliever internally. That was a certain height and was a type of ecstatic feelings he had, and a voice was speaking through him. He did not have even an inkling of disbelief. Not at all. But in an ecstasy, which he couldn't control, he uttered those words, Anal Haq, Anal Haq, for which there were explanations, and there are explanations for that. However, to stop mischief from spreading, the ulama passed the verdict of kufr against him when he was hanged. When he was about to be hanged, the masses thronged the site to have a glimpse. Junaid Baghdadi, Rahmatullah Alayhi, also came to see him. Mansur Hallaj said to him, to Junaid, the people who have assembled here are not aware of the facts. They know nothing. So I consider them to be excused. But oh you, ya Junaid, you know the facts. And what I say, you know the facts. And what I say and mean by that, you know that. Why then have you come? Junaid Baghdadi, Rahmatullah Alayhi, said, I have come because the edict, the verdict, the fatwa against you is correct. And you should be given this punishment. That was the outward punishment. Everything was okay there. But even Junaid Baghdadi, Rahmatullah Alayhi, he knew what Mansur really meant to say. So what is the conclusion? The ulama are the guards of religion. Allah has made the muftis as guardians of deen. It is their duty to disclose the truth. If anyone utters words of disbelief, then they must identify him as a kafir. Somebody told me, you people have assumed yourselves as contractors of religion and classify people as disbelievers and Muslims at will. I told him, that Allah has appointed us as guards of religion, not contractors. And it is the duty of the guard not allow anyone in, to not allow anyone in unless he identifies himself. He will not let even the prime minister inside without identification. Thus, anyone who wishes to enter into deen will be disallowed entry by us if he does not possess the characteristics required for that. So that's the outward verdict and fatwa. But do not say at all that he will go to hell. The muftis who correctly rule against someone as disbelievers are not to be blamed. But we cannot say how Allah will deal with him. That part we can't say. Will he send him to Jahannam? Would he send him to Jannat? And if he sends him to Jahannam, will he stay there forever? Or will Allah take him out after some punishment? We cannot decide that and should not go into those matters. A man may seem to be a disbeliever, but he might have an explanation because of which Allah might favor him. So, if you regard anyone as inferior, it means that you are arrogant. Al-hasil, conclusion. If you regard anyone as inferior, it means that you are arrogant. May Allah preserve us from such conduct. Ameen. But the next sitting is short also too, and it's only 5:30. And we need to get them for Ramadan. So Amjad advised that we should do a little 2-in-1 when it's short. Singular style is arrogance. Maulana Tanwi Rahmatullah Alayhi has said, exaggeration in personal style is arrogant conduct. Style, fashion, and ego are all devil's ways. Why must one consider oneself above other people that he should adopt a peculiar style for himself? Man must keep himself in the dress and style that is common. Why he has to be outstanding for? He should not let his personal opinion interfere in that. Be common with the dress and style that is common. And Fasih Isa. It is some people's temperament that they adopt a peculiar style to distinguish themselves among other people. For instance, they have a particular dress for meeting other people and want to be known to them by that. The Maulana said that it is a kind of arrogance. Do not insist on wearing a distinctive dress. If a man wears a particular kind of dress without insisting on it, then there is no harm in that. No harm. But if he must have always the same kind of cap, garments, and overall get up, and no other kind would do, then this idea is arrogant conduct. He wants to be distinct from others. That is wrong. He must be willing to live as Allah keeps him. When is it arrogance? Our elders never adopted a special kind of dress. They wore different kinds so that there was no arrogance in their conduct. It is not always haughty to wear a special kind of dress. Sometimes it is a man's habit to wear it without insisting upon it, and he goes on wearing it, no problem. There is no harm in that. But if he is never willing to change it and feels insulted if that happens, then he is being arrogant. One may not be ceremonial about it. Wear whichever dress is available to you without being formal and fussy about it. An incident in the Maulana's life. Maulana Ashraf Ali Tanwi, Rahmatullah Alayhi, used to wear a simple dress, but it was always proper. Maulana Tanwi, always proper, spick and span. He normally chose white color. Maulana Tanwi had two wives, one younger and one older. His elder wife used to love him very much. Once in Ramadan, she stitched an achkan for him. She was fond of nice things, so she chose a gaudy cloth for the Maulana, one with beautiful flowers on it, which is a kind of a sherwani, an outer coat. She chose a gaudy cloth for the Maulana, one with beautiful flowers on it. She did that quietly all through the month of Ramadan, without the Maulana knowing about it. She presented it to him just before Eid. "I have stitched it for you." The Maulana was taken aback on seeing it. He wondered, he had never worn such a gaudy dress before, but he did not tell her anything about it. And in fact, he praised her, he praised the stitching and the effort she had put in. "May Allah reward you for that," he said. She said, "I have stitched it that you may wear it and go for Eid Salat to the prayer ground, the Musalla." The Maulana was put in great difficulty. If he wore it to the Eidgah prayer ground, then people would make comments. And if he did not wear it, then she would be heartbroken. He was in a quandary. However, he finally decided to wear it for the Eid Salat, whatever other people might say. He decided to wear it. When the Salat was over, a man said to him, "Maulana, this achkan does not look good on you. It doesn't look good. Doesn't fancy you, suit you." Maulana said, "Yes, yes, you are right. So why not take it yourself? Take it." And he took it off and gave it to him. And achkan is a long, tight coat with full buttons in the front. He was an embodiment of servitude. Just imagine, a man as great as Maulana Thanvi Rahmatul Alayh had to wear something that he did not like and go to a large gathering, Eidgah. How must he have felt about it? But rather than hurt someone, he endured that. If any one of us was there, he would have told his wife, "Let your effort go wasted. I will not make a fool of myself before all these people." However, since the Maulana had subdued his nafs, his soul for Allah, given himself up and made himself a personification of servitude, it made no difference to him whether he wore ordinary clothes or bright, shiny ones. No difference. Anyway, one should not bind oneself to a particular style, nor insist on that till he becomes a slave of it. Spiritual cure for arrogance. The Maulana Rahmatul Alayh prescribed a spiritual cure for arrogance. Think of your shortcomings. Think of your shortcomings. Tell yourself that you have a firm knowledge of your shortcomings, while only a dhan, a presumption of the shortcomings of other people. And he who has a confirmed defect is worse than one whose defect is only presumed. How beautiful. Hence, you should think of yourself as inferior to others, and fasi isa, cure and remedy, take it again. Think of your shortcomings. Tell yourself that you have a firm knowledge of your shortcomings, while only a presumption and dhan of the shortcomings of other people. And he who has a confirmed defect is worse than one whose defect is only presumed. Hence, you should think of yourself as inferior to others. Commentary of this. A man is sure of his defects always, always. There's no doubt in that. But his knowledge of defects in other people will be presumed always, even if that is a strong presumption. Obviously, a defect that is known definitely is worse than one that is presumed. The arrogant person should therefore tell himself that he is worse off than the other, because his own defects are definitely there. They are there. And he should consider himself inferior to the other. A practical cure. The practical cure for it is to respect and honor him whom you consider lower than you. This practical cure is a necessary ingredient without which the spiritual cure will not work. Only then will arrogance be cured. Mufti Saab says, you have a poor opinion of the other person. You have a poor opinion of the other person. So if you meet him, what's the cure for that? If you meet him respectfully and treat him honorably, then your arrogance will be removed. The Maulana once prescribed to a man who wrote a letter to him that he prescribed to him that he should massage the feet of the travelers to remove his haughtiness. Graces of the elders differ. Our elders had different and peculiar manners. Maulana Thanwi, Rahmatullah Alayhi, was a well-dressed man. He wore clean and nice garments, well-dressed. As someone had remarked, Maulana Thanwi was always like a bridegroom. Always like a bridegroom. That was his style. On the other hand, Maulana Mahmudul Hasan, Sheikh ul Hind, the Sheikh of India, had given himself up to a greater degree and never bothered much on how he dressed. He wore a pajama, a tahban, a lungi, etc. And often he was not recognized because of this simplicity. Humility of the Sheikh ul Hind. It was the practice at the place of Sheikh ul Hind, Maulana Mahmudul Hasan, the great Sheikh of India. It was his practice in Ramadan to keep themselves occupied in Taraweeh all night. They offered the 20 rakat throughout the night and they recited 10 parts, 10 juz of the Quran therein. Thus, they finished reading the Quran from cover to cover every 3 days. Different huffaz led the salat. Maulana Fakhruddin was one of them. He was often chosen to lead the salat. One day he was unwell and unable to lead the salat. That day they had a shortened taraweeh. The Sheikh ul Hind stood up to offer nafil salat by himself instead. Maulana Fakhruddin went and lied down in a room adjacent to the masjid. He went and lied down in a room adjacent to the masjid. Late in the night, he realized that someone was pressing down his legs. He thought perhaps a student might have decided to be of service to him. And since he found that comforting, he did not move to see who that was. After some time, he turned to find the Sheikh ul Hind himself pressing his legs. This caused him surprise and shyness. He exclaimed, "No, no, don't do that. Don't do that, Maulana." "What's wrong with that?" said the Maulana. "You are unwell, so I may as well." The fact is that he was a teacher of Maulana Fakhruddin, but yet look at his humility and disposition. This is why Darul Uloom, Deoband, is well known, and the elders of that institute are famous. They rehearse the times of the Sahaba. Humbleness of Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi Rahmatullah Alayhi. Maulana Thanwi Rahmatullah Alayhi has written in Arwahi Salasa, "Our chief, Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi Rahmatullah Alayhi, used to get his students to pick up sandals as part of their psychological treatment. But he excluded from that those students whom he saw were already humble. Once he was taking a class when it started to rain. The students picked up their books and headed indoors. He collected their sandals and took them inside. These great men had refreshed memories of the Sahaba in their selfless lives and humility. Our minds are puffed up with a sense of greatness, knowledge, health, or other qualities. This has ruined us. May Allah cure us of it. Ameen. Arrogance, and as we come to the end of today's session, listen to these beautiful words. Arrogance hinders unity. Anytime you see to have unity in a place, it's because pride acting up somewhere. Mufti Taqi Usmani says, and listen well, we cannot stand united today. While everyone tries to achieve that, everybody wants to achieve unity. Everybody wants unity. Unity this, unity. We cannot stand united today while everyone tries to achieve that. Howsoever we try, we fail in that. But the great Sheikh, of Maulana Thanwi and the great Sheikh of Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi, Hazrat Haji Imdadullah Muhajir Makki, Rahmatullah Alayhi. Haji Saab said about it. He said, there are two conditions for unity to be established. Only when these two conditions are met can unity be achieved. They are, number one, sincerity, ikhlas. And number two, humility, humility. Sincerity and humility. Two haughty men can never be united. Two haughty men can never be united. If they ever unite, then that would be for personal ends and so temporary. And once their aim is achieved, they will disunite. Two haughty men can unite. Example of unity between the arrogant. Sometimes you see some unity between the arrogant, but that's just temporary for personal gains. Look at the example of it. My respected father, Rahmatullah Alayhi, used to compare the unity between two haughty people to an itching donkey. An itching donkey. This donkey cannot scratch itself. It cannot scratch itself. So it tells another donkey, you feel itchy? You feel itchy? So I will scratch your back and you scratch mine. So come close to me now. Come close to me. I scratch your back and you scratch mine. The unity of two arrogant people is no different. When their objective is achieved, they will kick one another away. When their objective is achieved, they will kick one another away. Hence, unity can only be achieved when there is sincerity and humility, ikhlas and tawadhu. Besides, at the base and the bottom of every discord and confusion and disharmony, at the base of it is arrogance. May Allah relieve us, all of us from it. Ameen. Subhanallah wa bihamdihi. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Nashhadu wa la ilaha illa anta. Nastaghfiruk wa natubu ilayk. Subhana rabbika rabbil izzati amma yasifun. Wassalamun ala al-mursaleen. Walhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Social expectation drowns us all inside. What you have should be what I want, 'cause what I have just ain't alright. The clothes I wear, the way I comb my hair, how I live, oh I don't care. This is who I am, this is me. Nothing, everything, can't you see who I am?